Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe UFC is 7-5 again. Oh no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to episode 546, coming to you on Thursday, July 11th. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football, including looking forward to the start of EA Sports College Football, which launches the pre-release on Monday afternoon. We're super pumped about that. We're going to talk about the top 100 players there, where USC has players, or maybe player, in that ranking, and so much more. On this episode, as always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Email address 818-643-7227. Second What's Brewing Show. That's our phone number. Our email address is rainoftroy@fanside.com.
I'm all turned around now.
And our phone number is 818-643-7227. Anyways, I'm your host, Mike Garcia, joined along with my co-host here in the Retro Studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello! We're back for another episode. We are a day late, but not a dollar short, I hope not.
Sometimes we are a dollar short.
Sure.
Sometimes it feels that way.
But here we are, Thursday, July 11th, only a couple days away from the start of EA College Football 25. We're super pumped about that. Today on this episode, we're going to go over a big one in the Big Ten Minutes, Ohio State. So stay tuned for that to see if we can sort of jam everything into 10 minutes talking about the Buckeyes. But Alicia, I think we just got to get like right into it, right? Let's just get into the news, shall we? Let's start with EA College Football 25. The early release is on Monday, now at 1 p.m. Pacific time?
Oh, yeah.
So the early release is technically the 16th, which is Tuesday, which usually means 9 p.m. Pacific time is when the games launch, because they'll usually launch at midnight Eastern. which will be 9 p.m. for us on the West Coast, which is awesome, right? Like, we can play it the night before, right? So I was looking forward to playing Monday night at 9 p.m., but ESPN put out a little thing. EA Sports put out a little thing that the game is going to be sort of available if you pre-ordered. You can pre-download and get ready to go at 1 p.m. Pacific time on Monday.
I am
clear your schedules.
Pumped. Yeah. I am also regretful that I have scheduled a podcast appearance for Monday night because I thought it wouldn't be, the game wouldn't be out yet. So
Can I blame Alicia Dertola for this?
So yes, I will have to abandon my my binge of the new college football game for a couple hours to record a podcast with another show, but I will still be playing a lot.
Yeah. Well, what's that other show? Give me a
Quack 12. I'm going to be with the guys over at Quack 12, Adam and Hitler. I've got my Invisalign in, and I didn't realize that Hitler Day was going to be a difficult thing to say with a new tray in, so apologize.
Yeah. Orthodontic problems. Mm-hmm. Anyways, super excited for you to be there. The guys over at the Quack 12 are awesome. One of these days, we're going to do like a Doughboys-esque type episode and talk food stuff. So look forward to that because, of course, everybody knows.
You have really good food takes.
Yeah, exactly. So, Alicia, let's talk about the top 100 players in the EA College Football 25 game. It was announced the top 100 players by overall ratings this week. Of the 100, 31 are in the Big Ten. 31, almost a third, are in the Big Ten. The number one overall player is Michigan cornerback Will Johnson, 96 overall. Michigan has five guys in the top 100. Ohio State has eight in the top 100. USC, drum roll please, one. Jonah Monheim. He is a center rated 92 overall, the 41st ranked top 41st overall ranked player in the game. Your thoughts?
I mean, that's well earned by Jonah Monheim. I've been sort of thinking about USC's most important players coming into the season. I think RJ Abedia at 24/7 Sports is doing a series, so I keep seeing the tweets, and it gets me thinking, like, who are USC's most important players? And I keep coming back to Jonah Monheim. I think that obviously Miller Moss is going to be super important, and a lot of guys on defense are going to be super important. But when it comes down to it, Jonah Monheim succeeding at center is kind of the end-all be-all for USC this year. He is the platform upon which USC can build some success. Yep. And he is a very talented player. He would not be getting that kind of rating from EA otherwise. The question for Monheim, for USC, for everyone is, he's definitely a 92 as a guard. I think he's definitely a 92 as a tackle. Is he a 92 as a center? That's my big question mark. So nice to see USC have somebody in there.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, if you look at the rest of USC's roster, I understand why USC doesn't have a load of guys in there. I think very much this roster is one that the snubs will be after the fact snubs.
Sure.
Like guys who proved that they should have been there in the first place, but on merit right now, I think maybe, you know, Kamari Ramsey probably has something to say about not being in that top 100, but it's hard to really make an argument for too many others.
The top 100 players are basically all 90s overall.
Yeah.
Eric in the chat says that leaked screenshots show Miller Moss has an 86 overall. Yeah, that seems about right, I think.
I mean, Arch Manning is an 87, so
sure. Who's now going to be in the game? I think that was all a PR play to not be in it and then be in it. And he's in the news cycle twice.
Yeah.
Looking at quarterbacks, other notable names: Shedeur Sanders, 93 overall from Colorado. Carson Beck from Georgia is 93 overall. Dylan Gabriel, 30th ranked player, is a 92. along with Quinn Ewers, who's also a 92. Looking at the list of notable guys on this list, I thought it was interesting that Arizona wide receiver T-Mac, Tedarius McMillan, 94 overall, 14th most valuable player in the game.
I see it.
One of those guys. You're glad that SC doesn't have to face.
Yeah.
Just like SC doesn't have to face Mika Ibuka, who is 93 overall, the 19th rated player. Cal's Jaden Ott, 93 overall, 25th in the nation. Good thing he's not on USC's schedule going forward. How about Josh Connerly? Remember him from recruiting?
There are some names there. Yeah.
He's a 90, the 95th overall player. Sean from Beautiful Austin, Texas in the chat says it's criminal that Branch didn't make the list. I think that Zachariah Branch has a tough spot here because I don't think that he should be rated 90 overall as a wide receiver right now. I don't think he's there yet. As a returner, he absolutely should be, but that's not how the game works. Like the game, usually you have a return rating within your normal rating, and that's not what ranks you as an overall player, which I think hurts Zachariah Branch a lot here. He's someone that you mentioned that could absolutely, if the season goes as you hope it does, you hope that he ends up being sort of a 90 overall guy. Absolutely.
Yeah, and again, it's USC has a ton of guys who are talented enough to be on this list,
mm-hmm.
but not proven enough to be on the list yet.
Right.
So I think Zachariah Branch is chief among them. He needs to prove that he can be a star wide receiver.
Yeah.
He can lead a receiving core. You know, I think he's uber talented, but even in the conversations you and I have had with people in the chat, other USC fans, you know, people are talking about Jacoby Lane. People are talking about Mekhi Lemon, and it's no shade on Zachariah Branch, but in terms of being a go-to wide receiver, I'm not even sure that Zachariah Branch is number one on my list of USC guys who could be that guy for USC. So he needs to prove he's more than special teams. He needs to prove that he's more than gimmick. And I think he can, but he hasn't done it yet. So I'm not really, like, it doesn't feel like a snub in this case.
I think part of that is last year how he was used. He was mostly used to get into space on jet sweeps, swing passes, stuff like that. He wasn't necessarily used as your typical, like, flanker, split end, or your Z wide receiver, whatever you want to call it, your X, right? Like, he wasn't used that way. Predominantly compared to the other guys in SC's receiving core. But this year, he's going to have to be, given that there's no Taj Washington, there's no Mario Williams, there's no Brendan Rice. He's going to have to be one of those big names in USC's wide receiver core. And I think that he absolutely is capable of being a great wide receiver, but we got to see it first. Looking at the guys on the notable list, and any other thoughts? A lot of Ohio State players, 8 in the top 100.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, Michigan still has top line talent. That's the big thing. Maybe not the depth that they had last year.
Yeah,
because they lost a whole ton of guys, but they still do have some top line talent there. Yeah, USC is lucky not to have to face Ohio State in the regular season. And you know, obviously Colorado and Arizona and Cal are interesting because we know those names, but again, guys that USC doesn't have to deal with. Mm-hmm. LSU does have some guys that USC is going to have to face immediately, including the number 2 overall player, Will Campbell, the left tackle at LSU. Their right tackle, Emory Jones, as well, is ranked 92nd. So that's going to be a huge challenge for USC's defensive line in the first game of the campaign. It's going to be quite telling to see whether or not USC's defensive line can go toe-to-toe with some, you know, not just the size of an SEC front, but
mm-hmm.
the talent that LSU is going to be bringing to the table in that regard. So USC is going to play a lot of talented teams. That's the question that keeps coming up, is can USC's own potential rise to meet what is already proven talent with several of the opponents for the coming year.
Yeah, they're going to play a lot of talented teams, absolutely. I think it does still help that when you look at sort of the schedule that SC has to play, they don't play Ohio State this year, barring some sort of conference championship game or, you know, maybe even a trip to the playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
But you look at Michigan. SC's got to play Michigan, 5 in the top 100. Oregon has 5 in the top 100, but SC doesn't play Oregon.
Notre Dame has 4 in the top 100.
Notre Dame has 4 and LSU have 4. So, and the first 2 weeks, they got to play the first 3 weeks, they play two of the top, they're the exact top two players the top two in the players country, according to the EA rankings. But of course, the games aren't won in video games. That's a merit. That's looking at talents as a measurement of everything else. And we know that SC still has a ton of talent, but I think the SC's talent is going to be like mid to high 80 guys right now.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, in the 90s. And they're going to have to prove that they can play at that top level and play cohesively as a team.
That's going to be the fun thing about USC this year is I agree. I think USC is just a team full of like 80-ish kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Who
85-ish.
Who USC needs. I mean, Miller Moss is a really good example. If the leaked screenshot is true and he's an 86, like he's a really, really good example of somebody who could be a huge riser if they do. I don't know. Are they going to do live updates?
I would
maybe
imagine
for Ultimate
so.
Team, I'm guessing.
Sure.
So, however it goes, like you think about guys like Miller Moss and especially on defense, a lot of the transfers, the Kamari Ramsey and John Humphrey and the Arnold, Akili Arnold and Easton Mascarenhas Arnold, like. There are some guys who will be out there to prove that they deserve to be in there.
Sure.
And Bear Alexander is another really good player who you could
Gentry.
See you could see being they're sort of 80-ish guys, but they need to take that next step up to being 90s, and it's up to USC's coaches to get them there, and that's what's really exciting to go into a season sort of fresh, knowing especially on the defensive side that it is a new voice, new voices in the room. The thing that we really liked about USC staff that they put together was that to a man, these were people that were overqualified for the jobs that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that at least at one point in their career, they proved that they could develop players at positions.
Right.
And so it's going to be cool to see what they're able to do because USC is coming from a position. USC is coming from a position of being doubted, and like we always make fun of Georgia and other teams, the chip on their shoulder. No one believed in us, and it's like you guys were ranked in the top five the whole year. USC is literally in a position where they are being doubted up, down, left, and center, and in our experience, USC teams that go into seasons in this position outperform that position pretty highly. So, you know, if history serves, it should be a fun season. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. The other thing is expect there to be a lot of high-ranking Trojans if you do play Ultimate Team because I'm not a Madden Ultimate Team guy, so I don't have high hopes for how Ultimate Team's going to work in EA College Football, but apparently, they have the licensing through the NFL to use the current NFL players. So, guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown, Juju, Caleb Williams, they're going to have cards in the game in Ultimate Team. And I think that's going to be a big boost to what SC can bring that way if you want to play with those guys. I'm not sure how the like Heisman stuff is going to go. Like, would they have Reggie Bush? Would they have
now we're talking
Carson Palmer? I know Matt Leinart is like involved with like a different video game, so like I wonder if his exclusive rights are through that. I don't know. We're gonna have to see how all of that stuff comes to be. Big Ten Media Days are coming up later this month. The Trojans have their three representatives. It's going to be Miller Moss, Jonah Monheim, and Kamari Ramsey going to Naptown, Indianapolis, to talk to the Big Ten media.
Yeah, I don't think there's any big surprises here, but as always, we can draw conclusions from the guys that get sent to Media Day. if there was any doubt about Miller Moss being the starting quarterback at USC, the answer,
I will say, it feels very telling. I am the one who's talked about, like, it's like it would still be a competition. Like, I think that Mayava can still beat him out, right?
Well, it could be 2016. I'm pretty sure. Didn't Max Brown wasn't he a media day invitee?
Was he? I don't remember.
I can't remember.
I think this is a situation where if I'm Lincoln Riley, I don't bring a quarterback. Like, unless you know for sure that he's going to sort of be your guy.
Unless you're Miller Moss, and I think they know for sure that he's their guy.
It kind of reads that way.
That's my read on it. I think there's...
It's just interesting given how coaches in college football now are so hush-hush about who wins the battle. They will deny, deny, deny. It'll be obvious who the quarterback's going to be, and they won't tell you until, that Sunday night when in Vegas, when whoever goes under center, in this case, behind in the shotgun, right? That's when you know. And yet, Lincoln Riley sort of seems like he is sort of going all in on Miller Moss, and rightfully so, given the Holiday Bowl stuff, but he's going to have to keep that going forward. I still think that Mayava, if he has a great camp, absolutely could force the issue. We'll have to see how that all goes. Let's talk about Josh Pate. The Josh Pate Show. I always forget the name of his show. What's the name of his show? The thing.
Late Kick Live.
There you go. Yeah. He talked a lot about USC this week. Alicia, what do you have to say?
Yeah, this was a clip that was doing the rounds. We can maybe put it in the show notes. It went viral on USC Twitter. And it was essentially Josh Pate talking about the state of USC's football program.
Yeah.
A lot to do with NIL. And to sum up what he said, for those who haven't listened, and I would encourage you guys to go listen, he said that basically he thought that USC would be an NIL giant and a transfer portal giant when all of these things happen, but that
I think we all did.
That hasn't necessarily come to pass. And he thinks that USC doesn't have the right people making the decisions in the background. He specifically said he doesn't think it's Lincoln Riley that's the problem. He thinks it's the people above Lincoln Riley, the decision makers, the organizational structure that Riley stepped into. He said that USC isn't close to touching like Texas, Ohio State, or Oregon in terms of NIL power. And I think there's truth to that in the sense that, because one of the other things he said, it's not that USC is lacking dollars. I tend to think that. I think USC has NIL dollars. It's either how USC is choosing to use it or how they are managing it or how it is being proposed to players that there's some sort of disconnect going on. Josh Pate basically went to town on USC's administration that there seems to be, he thinks that there is a lack of cohesiveness, coherency, doesn't feel like everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet, and that when that happens, you end up in a situation where you lag behind the programs that are all in lockstep. I thought one of the interesting things he brought up, because it has been open season on Lincoln Riley in a lot of places. I mean, I should have added this to the rundown. I'm sorry that I didn't, because I forgot about it up until now. Paul Feinbaum said that he thinks that Lincoln Riley won't be at USC in 2025. He thinks Lincoln Riley will be out by the end of the season, which I think is an absurd thing to say, just from a logistical standpoint. USC is not firing Lincoln Riley no matter what happens, unless they can fire him for cause. They are not firing Lincoln Riley this year, even if things go bad. And Lincoln Riley leaving USC, I think it will be very difficult for him too, because unless USC completely screwed up the contract, which... to my knowledge, you know, Brandon Sosna was involved in that. I have decent amount of faith that he wouldn't have let USC screw up the contract. I would imagine that Lincoln Riley getting out of the contract would be pretty prohibitively expensive too. Besides which, it's I don't think USC is going to be in a position where they have to get rid of the coach. I think, you know, I think USC might be in a place where the season is slightly disappointing, but not to the degree that you know, burn the whole thing down.
Right.
But so aside from that, it's open season on Lincoln Riley, but Josh Pate basically says that he thinks that Lincoln Riley didn't get what was pitched to him when he decided to come to USC in terms of the structure that USC was putting together. And I wonder how much of that might be kind of true, because Lincoln Riley came to USC under an athletic director, Mike Bone, but very specifically his chief of staff, Brandon Sosna, who was putting together a structure that was going to make USC competitive, and then he left. And then USC seemed to sort of be in sort of a liminal space. And then they bring in Jen Cohen. Jen Cohen hasn't been at USC very long. She's still having to sort of sort out things in the athletic department. And it wouldn't surprise me if USC doesn't have everything running very smoothly at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Is that acceptable? No. USC needs to get to a point where they're running smoothly.
Yeah.
But to me, that seems like where USC is at, this disconnect between the dollars that USC says it has, that we think it has, versus how USC is sort of bringing everything together to marry strategies from keeping players on the roster, which yeah. USC has generally done pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I know they got Bear to stay, right? Like,
you can point to Malachi Nelson and Damani Jackson and Tackett Curtis, but for me, the circumstances around those departures had a lot less to do with NIL and a lot more to do with circumstance. So, you know,
on field play as well.
Yeah, what will be will be.
Right.
But there are a lot of other players that USC could have lost, Bear Alexander chief among them. If USC's NIL was not good enough to keep guys present, USC brought in a ton of transfers, missed on a few transfers that they really wanted. So, you know, maybe yeah, it's the top end that USC is missing out on. But
I think part of it is it's the line play, right? Like, the line guys are the ones that people are always going to remember. SC can get as many 5 stars on the perimeter as they do, as they can, will, etc. But if you don't have those guys on the line, I think it's easy to still say, but you're not bringing in those guys. You're not bringing in another Bear Alexander. You're not going to get the guys from Texas A&M that were leaving and going to get the guys from Georgia and all that. But I keep going back to the fact that NIL is, and we've said this before, like, it's so new that I think so much of it is a lot like, to make an F1 analogy, when F1 every 5 years or so they put out the new specifications on what it's like to build a car, what the rules are to build a car. And that's kind of like what NIL was. Like, okay, this thing is coming. There's very vague bullet points. Build your strategy to this. And you're like, oh, okay, you just got to figure out this thing. And I think SC assumed that they were going to be very strong, and I think we all did, because SC is in a major media market. SC has a crap ton of history and prestige that way. And SC's always been, you know, a big fish. They're a blue blood. But we've learned now that that isn't the entire thing. And I think that when you put that into, you know, SC has done well to get a bunch of transfers in positions of need like they have on defense, but not all the positions of need. It's still, they've made gains, but not all the gains. And you combine that with what, like, schools like Texas and Oregon, schools that don't have the historic pedigree that USC does, but they have their interpretation of how NIL was is so different than SC has been. Walter in the chat says, first of all, it's not NIL, it's pay for play or a signing bonus to come to a school.
I mean, it literally is pay for play at this point. It's pay for play did you wrapped see the, up in NIL.
Did you see the quote from Dave Aranda at Baylor? Yeah.
Amazing quote.
Asked why Baylor's recruiting is upticked. Well, we're paying guys.
He literally said, we're paying players. He literally said that. Like, can you imagine 5 years ago, I come to you and say the head coach at Baylor University had a quote literally that said, we are paying players. Yeah. It would have been absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
But listening to, I think what's interesting listening to you and listening to Josh Pate is this idea that like USC should act like you, like Josh Pate literally said USC should act like USC, and you've talked about USC's sort of historic relevance
but there are
stories that Ryan Abraham tells about how Chris Carlisle asked for better weight equipment and USC said, well, you're winning with the crap that you have. Like, USC acting like USC is not necessarily any different than what you're seeing from USC right now. It's
historically, SC acting like SC is pointing to the history books and saying, well, that's what you want, isn't it? And it's like, I get it that that's self-serving, and there's a lot of people who, you know, any Oregon tweet that is replied to by a USC fan is mentions the number of national championships and the discrepancy there. But that only gets you so far in terms of recruiting.
It doesn't help that Oregon literally, there was an article out this week about how Phil Knight has given Oregon unlimited resources for NIL, like unlimited NIL dollars.
Right.
And so then USC gets compared to Oregon and it's like, well, is that even fair? Not that USC shouldn't be going toe to toe with Oregon for a lot of these recruits and winning more of these battles than they are. But, like, is it even fair when Oregon, when Phil Knight has decided that he's going to, like, Roman Abramovich this-ish, like...
Rest in peace, Roman Abramovich. Not really, but you know what I mean. This is where I go. Just pull up the notable alumni page of SC's Wikipedia. And, yeah, like, but none go of down them are, the list.
No, no, but that's the problem. Like, that's the problem. USC doesn't have a football-interested sugar daddy... The way that Oregon does, I mean, and I'm not excusing
the CEO of United, you know, cared enough to put their name on the Coliseum turf.
Yeah, because they get to have the name there, like they get to be sponsors and all of that kind of stuff. Like USC doesn't have unlimited resources being funneled into the program, and that's a USC thing too. Because this is this is something we've talked about. Part of the problem is that USC gets people excited by winning, and winning breeds attention, and attention breeds attendance and donations and all of these kinds of
things.
A lot
of that stuff ends up being a year or two after the fact.
Yeah, it's not it's not like a program like Texas A&M, who is just so desperate to win that they will just funnel, Oregon desperate to win that they will funnel in money. Yeah. Or Nebraska,
but this is frustrating because the SC fans, the people listening to this podcast, the people that are subscribed to the P and all that stuff, like those people are desperate. Like those,
yeah,
the,
but
the,
we don't
the,
have
the diehard fans are desperate.
We don't have millions of dollars to give to USC happen. But like, and there's a worry. I think there's a legitimate worry, and USC needs to answer this question and take a deep look at itself. And hopefully, this is what Jen Cohen is doing, but. If you donate money to USC, are you getting your money's worth in terms of the way that that money is being spent? It's like it's like taxes. Like, people hate giving taxes if they're not seeing the fruit of their taxes in what the government does. Like, that's just from a USC perspective. I could see the broad donor base looking around and going like, I didn't fund Clay Helton's buyout and I didn't fund Lincoln Riley's contract, 10 years, $100 million supposedly, to go 8-5. Like, and it sucks.
But this is where I also say that, like, Lincoln Riley has had one season in which he went 8-5. Like,
yes. And let's just calm down here. I mean, this is why I got so offended by the Paul Feinbaum thing where he said that the train has left the station for Lincoln Riley having success at USC. And I'm like,
Hey, Robbots, it's Michael here. If there's two things you know about me, one, it's that I have great food takes, but two, it's that I'm lazy. I like things to be easy and simple. So when Mint Mobile came to me and said that they can save money on my mobile bill, I was super skeptical. $15 a month? That doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound easy. But yet it is. $15 a month with the purchase of a 3-month plan. I called them on it, and guess what? It works. To get started, just go to mintmobile.com/Troy, T-R-O-Y, and that deal that they gave me, you can get. There you'll see right now all 3-month plans are only $15 per month, including the unlimited plan. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your own phone number along, even your existing contacts. So find out how easy it is to switch to Mint Mobile and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15. To get this offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/Troy, T-R-O-Y. That's mintmobile.com/Troy. Cut your wireless bill to just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Troy. A $45 upfront payment is required, which is equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on the first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigs on unlimited plans. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. You know, the problem is,
the problem
is that year one and year two were
flipped.
If they were the other way around,
yeah,
I think things would be so different.
Yeah.
And maybe not, because it would be coming off of that Cotton Bowl game and people were sour about the Cotton Bowl game and, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And maybe you would say that, you know, if whatever. I'm saying that if this past year was year one...
Alex Grinch would still be USC's defensive coordinator.
Sure, fair enough. But I'm just saying, if this past year was year one, and then Lincoln Riley goes out and gets the new defensive coordinator and all that stuff, and like they go into year two with a quarterback who ends up winning the Heisman Trophy in year two, because and they go 11-1 the regular season, like things are just... I think so much of the discourse is completely different. But it's not, and this is why you've got to rebound. You got to find a way to prove. I think Lincoln Riley's track record says that he is not an 8-5 coach, 7-5 in the regular season last year. But that's what the track record says. But like, you've got to prove that the track record is right. You've got to go out there and, you know, take advantage of a Big Ten schedule that we've talked about that is, you know, not easy. But they're also not facing Oregon and Ohio State. They're not going and getting Penn State on the road. They're getting them at home instead. Like, they're getting Michigan early on in the season instead of the end. Like, there's a bunch of things that I think still fall in SC's favor. They've got to take advantage of those. They've got to get the defense improved. They've got to, you know, make Miller Moss or Maiava, whoever the quarterback is, to have success. And
they got to get the wide receivers playing well. They got to get the offensive line playing well. Like,
the pieces are there. This is such a
prove it year for USC on so many levels. It really is fascinating. We can have
I guess I'm just saying that even though you can sit here and say, well, they don't have the Josh Connerly, they don't have the Mykel Williams, they don't have those guys that people wanted in recruiting 2-3 years ago. Even still, I think SC still has a team that is absolutely capable of winning a bunch of games, and on a week-to-week basis, they're going to have as much talent, if not more talent, than 90% of their opponents.
Mm-hmm.
It's still in their possession to win this thing.
For instance, does Wisconsin, does Nebraska, does Maryland... Does Rutgers do any of them do any of them have a single player in the top 20 in the top 100 players on?
Wisconsin had a couple.
Wisconsin has a couple. Okay.
Yeah.
So
and I think there was one Rutgers guy.
Yeah. When we get the roster ratings, for College Football 25, not that this is the end all be all, but it's going to be a really good reference
when the game comes out on Monday.
Game comes out, will USC have a higher rated roster than the majority of the teams on its schedule?
Yeah.
I would wager
Yes.
The teams on USC's 2024 schedule. Let me pull it up.
Don't we already have the overall rankings?
Do we have the overalls?
I think those are the overall rankings were like last week.
No, we got offenses and defenses.
Yeah, but there top teams.
Oh, I thought it was just top 25.
Yeah, top 25 rankings.
But I and think USC
that,
is in top 25.
But that would tell us, because yeah. SC is in the top 25.
Let me guess. It's Notre Dame, LSU, Michigan, Penn State?
Hold on. Pulling it up. Here we go. Top 20. LSU is 8th. Michigan is 11th. Wisconsin is 18th. SC is 19th.
Okay.
So everybody else is underneath them.
And Penn State.
Yeah, Penn State is 9th.
And Notre Dame.
Notre Dame is ahead. Yeah, so then Notre Dame, LSU, Penn State, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin.
Five.
And
five
Wisconsin.
The,
and Wisconsin's
five of
a
the
push.
12.
Yeah.
Yeah, five of the 12.
Yeah.
But, and of those, SC only gets, what, one on the road?
Mm-hmm.
In Michigan? So, yeah, I it could be so much worse. I guess what I'm saying is, I think SC, we still have to remember that SC has a ton of talent, even though,
But that's USC's rating with us looking at ratings already and saying,
sure.
Like, we think USC is going to have a lot of guys in a weird, like,
who could
80,
take a big step forward.
80-ish,
yeah.
Because they have not proven themselves. And so who knows what they're going to be. Like, but that's,
yeah.
This is where, for me, Lincoln Riley needs to come through. Because people have been, to me, erroneously claiming that Caleb Williams made Lincoln Riley, which, again, is absurd. But Lincoln Riley gets
at some
to prove,
point. If you sit there and say that Lincoln Riley only succeeded
because of his quarterbacks,
because of Baker Mayfield's, Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray, and Caleb Williams, at some point you sit there and go like, well, who brought those guys? And
yeah. So Lincoln Riley gets to prove that his offense really is legit, even beyond Caleb Williams at USC.
Right.
And Danton Lynn gets to have the ultimate prove it, because if he turns around USC the way he turned around UCLA, like
USC, yeah.
I worry that Danton Lynn is not long for Los Angeles. If
sure, well,
if that happens,
this is my thing. Like to go back to the Finebond thing of Lincoln Riley leaving, I think if SC has to replace Lincoln Riley after this season, it is most likely only because of good things that happen.
Yes. Well, it's because the NFL, he leaves for the NFL.
Yeah, like he leaves for the NFL or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's talk about everyone's favorite segments. The Big Ten. You ready for the Big Ten moment?
Minutes?
Big Ten minutes. Yeah. Let's get to it.
A big 10 minutes.
All right, we're talking about Ohio State, the Ohio State University, founded in 1870 as funded by then Ohio Governor Rutherford B. Hayes. Ever heard of him?
I have.
Yeah, he was the president. Ohio Agricultural and Mechanical College. Alicia, I think this technically means it was Ohio A&M. What? Like, go back
it
to
is
Ohio
A&M.
A&M. Look at that. The Ags. Wow. But let's talk about the whatever. Ohio State, of course, owns the as a trademark on Ohio State merchandise that is representative of the athletic department. But are they the only university that starts with a definite article? No. There's even several in the Big Ten alone. Penn State officially is named the Pennsylvania State University.
Hmm.
Rutgers is officially named Rutgers, comma, the State University of New Jersey.
That's a lot, Rutgers.
Michigan goes by U of M. UCLA goes by UCLA. But both of them on their official seals as universities, the University of Michigan and the University of California.
So USC is University of Southern California. It's not the
There's
University
no
of Southern
There's
California.
There's no that. Gotcha. There's no that. So, in other words, Ohio State University, often called the State University of Ohio, yeah, it's you know, it, the,
I like
the,
Ohio A&M.
The that's there, but like,
I
the
go,
isn't that rare.
We need to go full bore with the USC message boards and make Ohio A&M happen.
Yeah, there you go. Of course, Ohio State University represented It's in Columbus, Ohio. They're the Buckeyes. Why are they the Buckeyes? Because the Buckeye tree is the official tree of the state of Ohio. The nuts are dark brown spheres with little tan dots on them, which sort of resemble the eye of a buck.
What were the odds that USC went from one conference that had a tree mascot to another conference that essentially has a tree mascot?
Pretty good. Pretty good. The OSU officially adopted the name Buckeyes in 1950 after years and years of being informally referred to as the Buckeyes, since Ohio State, of course, is the most, Buckeye State.
This is the most sensical, as opposed to nonsensical, mascot origin story we have come across in the Big Ten.
Yes.
So far.
Yeah, I it's very straightforward. It's the Buckeye State. There's They're a nut. The they look like the eyes of bucks. The team, therefore, called that.
Yes.
One weird Ohio State fact. In 1926, Ohio State's homecoming queen was Maudine Ormsby. She was a Holstein cow.
They're not beating the Ohio State A&M allegations.
No. Well, okay, so the story on this is that the woman who won, she won with like a vote. There were 12,000 votes, but there were only 10,000 students at the time. So people were like, oh, this is a little fishy. So she recused, whatever the word is. She makes herself ineligible, right?
Yeah, recused herself.
The second place person in the homecoming queen voting was Maudine Ormsby, who was a phantom prank candidate put in by the School of Agriculture. Of course.
This reminds me of one of the most recent episodes of Pablo Torre Finds Out that I have been telling everybody and their mother to listen to, where talking about how the Buffalo Sabres drafted a fake Japanese player. And
in 1974 or
in
whatever
1974.
It was.
Yeah. Go listen to it. It's wonderful. But yes, the Ohio State fake homecoming queen candidate cow.
It's a great story.
It's wonderful.
It's a great story. Yeah. Ohio State has two fight songs, Buckeye Battle Cry and Across the Fields. We reached out to our good friend, Nick Shook of NFL Network. Which one is the one? And he said Across the Fields, kind of probably more famous. He likes Buckeye Battle Cry a little bit better.
Is this like Fight On versus like Conquest, if Conquest had lyrics?
I wonder if it's Fight On versus Tribute.
Okay. Or Tribute if it had lyrics.
Sure. Something like that. But we're going to read Across the Field.
Okay.
Which is Across the Field. Here we go. Fight the team across the field. Show them Ohio's here. Set the earth reverberating with mighty cheer. Rah, rah, rah.
Gotta have those rahs.
Hit them hard and see how they fall. Never let the team get the ball. Hail, hail, the gang's all here. So let's win that old conference now. I think it's hilarious that Ohio State has a fight song with Hail,
with
Hail,
Hail
in it.
Yeah, yeah. There are lines of this that I absolutely love.
Set the earth reverberating with a mighty cheer. Fantastic.
Is great. But I hate, like, I need things to rhyme in, like, couplets and be very structured. And I get really mad when you break a rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
So let's win that old conference now does not.
Buckeye Battle Cry has 11 warriors brave and bold in there, which 11 warriors is a reference to 11 warriors site.
Yeah.
Comes from the song there. But drive down the field. The men of Scarlet and Gray, don't let them through that line. We have to win this game today. Come on, Ohio. I like that, too. There's good stuff there. Let's talk about the alums. A lot of big founder, inventor types. Paul Imes, the founder of Imes, the pet food.
Hey.
He went to Ohio State. Carl Probst, the inventor of the Jeep. Roy Plunkett, the inventor of Teflon. Every politician's favorite surface. How about Abraham Lorry, the developer of Marina Del Rey?
Yeah, Los Angeles connection.
Yeah, if you're from the MDR, you can credit a Buckeye there. Howard Dwight Smith, the architect of the Horseshoe, the stadium, Ohio Stadium, the Horseshoe. George Steinbrenner, the five-time firer of Billy Martin and the late owner of the New York Yankees. Dwight Yoakam, the country singer. R.L. Stein, Everyone's favorite childhood author,
not mine.
I think.
Those books scared me.
Richard Lewis. Rest in peace, Richard Lewis. Jesse Owens, the Olympic hero.
Hey-o.
Jack Nicklaus, the golf god. Kirk Herbstreit, the greatest football analyst of all time. I will make that an argument.
No argument.
He's the GOAT. You want a perfect box? Put perfect press box, Keith Jackson, Kirk Herbstreit together.
Let's do it.
Can't beat it. And of course, Jack Buck, the voice of the Cardinals, the father of Joe Buck. And I'm going to go on a hot take here. I think the person who has the greatest call in the history of sports. Gibson swings and a fly ball to deep right field. That's going to be a home run. Unbelievable. A home run for Gibson. And the Dodgers have won the game 5-4. I don't believe what I just saw. I know everyone loves Vin Scully's call.
No, I'm with you. I don't believe what I just saw. I don't believe what I just saw. That's
Vin Scully's call is a 99, 100% call.
Yeah.
Jack Buck's is like one slight percentage point above. Either way, they're the best two calls in the history of sports.
Yes.
In the same moment that they were sitting probably like 20 feet from each other saying it at the same time is nuts.
Yeah.
But here we go. Last notable alumni to mention, Jeffrey Dahmer. Okay.
Hey, they got to have their own serial killer.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah.
All right. Minute 43 to go. Here we go. Perception of Ohio State fans. There's a lot of them. This is a big school, right?
There's a lot of them. They're very passionate.
A lot of weirdos that dress up in garb.
They have a lot of garb.
Buckeye guy, yeah.
I don't have a bad perception of Ohio State fans.
No, passionate. Yet. Passionate.
Very passionate, respected.
Yeah, first athlete that comes to mind?
Eddie George.
Okay, I say Archie Griffin. Mm-hmm. Two-time Heisman winner, the only one to win the Heisman twice, even though we know the second one was fraud. Famous Buckeye players, Luke Groza, Chris Carter, Eddie George, Ted Ginn, Bo Schembechler.
It's funny.
Jack Tatum, Troy Smith. 10 national championships, 7 Heisman trophies, 41 Big Ten titles, all time against USC. They have a losing record. The Trojans are 13-10-1. Of course, we remember the 2008-2009 home-and-home series, which was great. SC won 35-3 at home in 08. Went on the road. You got to love what Joe McKnight could do. Mm-hmm. On that drive, 18-15 SC wins in Columbus in 2009. 5 USC to Ohio State versus Ohio State Rose Bowls in a 12-year stretch from 1969 to 1980. The Trojans won a bunch of those with iconic moments. You had John McKay taunting Woody Hayes with the Sam Bam Cunningham going over the top, the leap. The J.K. McKay catch in 1975. The Charles White touchdown in the final moments in 1980. The next game, of course, 2026 at the Coliseum. Ryan Day's the head coach, and that's the Buckeyes.
Nice. Hit the post. Justin.
As he doesn't play them for 2 years, we don't really got to talk about their current stuff.
In a perfect world, USC will play them this year.
Yeah, or next year. Yeah.
In a perfect world, USC plays them this year. That's the way I sort of look at it. I think that... It's funny hearing this all get sort of thrown out there. USC Ohio State might be one of the most underrated
national rivals.
Intersectional rivals.
No longer anymore.
I mean, yeah, because they're not.
Conference rivals, baby.
It's now intrasectional.
Yeah.
I just think that it is such that these matchups have produced such legendary moments.
Well, We've talked about it before. Like, you look at SC's rivalries and they're in little tiers, right? Like, the top tier is UCLA and Notre Dame. Pick your poison, who you want, is 1 or 2. 3 and 4, the next tier is Stanford and Cal. And we've always said the next tier after that, you can choose either the conference rivals of Oregon and Washington, mm-hmm, or the national historic rivals of Michigan and Ohio State. And I think Michigan and Ohio State and Oregon and Washington, all of them collectively are all sort of in that boat now, but historically, right there. Like, Ohio State is one of the schools that you judge SC by historically and because of those great, you know, games in the 70s.
In a weird way, as much as people say that, like, there's culture shock with USC going to the Big Ten, in a weird way, USC and the Big Ten have already been linked together. Mm-hmm.
Because of those rogue rules.
Inextricably, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get to the mailbag, shall we?
You've got mail.
All right. Let's start with a question we got here on the YouTubes from Ron Murdy. What are the things you're looking forward to most heading into Big Ten Media Days?
I am looking forward to hearing from Miller Moss. There was an interview with him going around on Twitter recently that, like, I put this on Twitter. I have to admit, like, Miller Moss has completely and utterly won me over.
He says the right thing every time.
In the sense that, like, one of the things that can be frustrating being a college football fan is we care so much. We care about USC winning. We mm-hmm. care about the university. We care about the community. We care about all of that kind of stuff. And sometimes, not that this
show
is...
Show me something. Show the fans something.
Not that this is like... not that I'm making a judgment, because this is across the board. Every school deals with this. There's like a business-like nature to college football sometimes with players who come and are, you know, they're at USC and they certainly want to win, but it doesn't always feel like it's for the sake of USC.
Mm-hmm.
Miller Moss is one of those rare players that you look at and you think if he was not at USC, if he was not an athlete, if he was not a quarterback, if he was just a regular guy, he would be at USC anyways.
Yeah.
And you can't say that about most players on any given roster.
He's got the metaphorical tattoo, right?
Yes.
Like he's like the Barkley.
Yeah.
This is maybe a bad comparison. The Ricky Town who had the picture, the childhood pictures,
yeah.
Right? Like you see those things.
Yeah.
Those are John Jackson III, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like guys who have a history, have a legacy, either because they grew up as fans or they grew up because of, you know, somebody was close to them in the program or whatever. And mm-hmm. Miller Moss is that guy who, yeah, like when Lincoln Riley says that he wants to go out and get guys who want to be Trojans.
Miller Moss is that guy. 1,000,000%.
He's that guy. Yeah. I remember last year, I think it was after the opener against San Jose State, that he had a touchdown pass in that game. And then Peter Arbogast was talking to him on my drive home from the game, listening to it, and the question was basically like, you have Caleb Williams ahead of you. You can leave. You can go to anywhere you want to go. That's what college football is now. There's no need to have loyalty to the school that recruited you out of high school. Why are you still here? And not asked in a skeptical way or
yeah.
cynical way, but like, in a like what is it about SC that like that has you here? And like Miller Moss's answer was basically like, I want to be a Trojan, man. Like I bleed Cardinal and gold. I'm here because of I grew up watching Matt Barkley and Cody Kessler and Sam Darnold and all those guys. You cut his finger open and there's Cardinal blood coming out. Cardinal and gold blood.
I should hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is like, anyone who's listened to the show has known I have been skeptical of Merrill Moss as USC's starting quarterback in the past.
Sure.
The Holiday Bowl did a lot to ease some of my concern, but at this point it's not like any skepticism that I had, any doubt that I might have or might have had, has sort of been washed away by just like this sincere desire for Miller Moss to succeed as USC's quarterback, because there's just something magical about like dreams coming true like that.
I hate myself for making this comparison. Is he SC's Stetson Bennett? Like, okay, not
yeah,
literally,
I mean,
not like,
literally, because like, it's not fair to Miller Moss.
No.
Like, it's not because Miller Moss is, again, and I think we have to say this a lot. We need to keep saying this, like, we treat Miller Moss like he was some scrub recruit.
Right. And I don't mean it like that.
He was a big time, like he was a four star, like top 100 recruit.
Yeah. But I mean like a guy who was like seemingly destined to be like the SC guy, all just about the SC
Everyone assumed that Miller Moss would not be the one that would. Miller Moss is, I think that a better comparison might be like Miller Moss's status at USC over the past couple of years has been very Matt Fink-like.
Sure.
In the sense that, like, yeah, he's there. Yeah, he keeps, he sticks around. But part of that around.
Is because he's been under Caleb Williams. Yeah, and so in well, comparison,
like, by it, comparison, everybody's going to look like Matt Fink, to Caleb right. Williams.
Right, right, right.
But the question was going to be, like, Malachi Nelson was supposed to be the guy over him. Jaden Maiava, you know, some assumed that he would come in and be the starter. And Miller Moss has, I think, taken that. Now, there are 2016...
Stetson Bennett. Like, Stetson Bennett was...
Well, the underdog in every quarterback battle that he was in, and he still just came out on top because he had...
Yeah.
I mean, that would be... It would be amazing if Miller Moss turned out to be USC Stetson Bennett in the
Stetson
sense...
Stetson Bennett's first word was UGA. Yeah.
But in the sense that, like, what Stetson Bennett brought to Georgia was sheer it factor, sure. sheer... desire, sheer, just like that swag almost.
So where do we think Miller Moss Mercedes is going to be, like in the valley? Valley kid.
Yeah,
jump
yeah.
down to the Miller Moss Mercedes of
Van Nuys. He's going to take over keys on Van Nuys.
Moss and Van Nuys. There you go. You never know. All right, we got a couple emails about off-topic SC stuff. So if you hate Formula One, then we'll see
you
next week.
If you don't want us to talk about Formula One, send in your questions about USC so that you almost filibuster our Formula One talk. But now we talk Formula One.
And in your phone calls, no one calls us anymore.
No one calls us. We got the line hooked back up. And
I think we need to put out like an APB for some of our callers. Michael in Iowa, what's going on, bud? Dave in Orange County, what's on, man? 818-643-7227.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge.
All right, let's get to these emails that we got. First one comes from Tony in Denora, PA. Woo! Lewis wins the race. Didn't know that was ever going to happen again. I didn't know if I was going to see him win another race. Another email from Big Poppy 55. What up, Renner Troy? It's been a while since I've written in. SC News has been mad, but you know what hasn't? Formula One! What are your thoughts on this season? Started off as a Max-dominated season, but now he's not always winning by 30 seconds now. And what about Ferrari going from winning at Monaco to what the heck happened? Also, Sir Lewis Hamilton at Silverstone. Jeff's kiss. Fight on, Big Poppy 55. Yeah, Lewis wins the British Grand Prix last week in a great race.
I think that's one of the things that I like about following F1 is that I don't have like team allegiances the way that I do with other sports. Yeah. So I am loyal to whatever the best narrative is. Mm-hmm. And the best narrative at Monaco was Charles Leclerc winning Monaco. The best narrative at Silverstone was Lewis Hamilton winning.
Yeah.
And you know, the best narrative for Max is always anywhere that the Orange Army is, you know.
But, like, winning. I think it's great that Max is being, like, challenged. And if he wins now, it's, like,
it'll
very impressive, right? Yeah. Like, he doesn't have the fastest car. You can make the argument he has, like, the third best car at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he's still the odds-on favorite because he's going to put you into a position where you got to be perfect to beat him. And that makes it very difficult, right? And for Lewis to win a race again, awesome. It's a bummer that his streak of winning every year was sort of snapped a couple years ago.
Yeah,
but that he won a race at Silverstone in the British Grand Prix was chef's kiss, and that race was great. I am someone who I like Max, but also I feel like I'm rooting for Lando more than anything else right now, and the McLaren guys and. Those are two dudes who could feel hard done by that race last week that their race was sort of thrown away.
Narratives. Lando and McLaren and
they're like Ferrari from two years ago.
They're growing pains. Will we see them finally like get over that hump? You know, well, Ferrari being what happened to Ferrari, it's like Ferrari'd. Like, this is just who they are. And you don't want to see McLaren fall into that same trap of just one step forward, two steps back, which is entirely possible.
How are you going to feel when Sainz goes to Williams?
I hope that Williams and their investment produces a car that is drivable. Honestly, I'd kind of rather see Sainz at Williams than Alpine.
Sure, because who the hell likes Alpine?
Because it feels like Williams is at least trying to ascend, where Alpine just seems to be
mid-table. Who likes the French, am I right?
I actually like the French. I really enjoyed France.
I like Pierre Gasly, but, you know, Ocon couldn't. Yeah,
not my favorite.
No, not at all. So, no race this week, but they'll be back. Next week is Hungary. So.
Instead, we've got the Euro final on Sunday. We got Copa final, but the soccer. Don't talk about soccer. Is all about it. Spain versus England. Yeah. I will.
I'm sorry. It's an all Chelsea final. It's Cucurella versus Cole Palmer. So.
So we'll it's future Liverpool star Nico Williams versus
future Chelsea star Nico Williams
versus hard done Liverpool star Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah. And then Copa, you have Messi against James Rodriguez, and it's like 2014 all over again.
Luis Diaz. Well, it's Liverpool's Luis Diaz versus Liverpool's Alexis McAllister.
Mac Allister.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, we're losing followers left and right. So it's time for us to bounce. West Texas Mike says he'd rank across the field ahead of Victor's, which I think is a take. That is a take and a half. I like across the field.
But the Victors
the Buckeye Battle Cry. But like the Victors
I think it is far and away. Far and away the best fight song in college football.
There's Sergeant Pepper. There's Dark Side of the Moon, and then there's the Victors, and like they're right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're in that same discussion. And the only college football fight song that I think is can get close to the Victors. Is your other favorite?
Oh, Notre Dame's fight song is a really, really good fight song.
Yeah.
Cheer for old Notre Dame.
Uh-oh, you can't literally sing your own.
I'm singing my high school fight song.
It's the same thing. Literally, it's the same thing. So. All right, we'll be back next week. Until then, see ya. Also, we got a question from Sean in beautiful Austin, Texas on Twitter about, like, when are we going to start streaming? I think we're going to stream next week. So
we got to be streaming next week because the game comes out next week. We were going to try and do some lead up so we could learn how to do it all, and we have not done that.
We'll get it all figured out. So we'll stream or something next week. So until then, we will see ya.
See ya. Go Spain.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.